All right, and it is 9 a.m. in the West Coast. It is noon in the East Coast, and it's 7 p.m. in Jerusalem, the capital of Israel. Today is July 18, 2016, and this is Orly Benny Davis with The Impossible Truth. Today on BBS Radio, we are going to touch base with our dear, incredible world that just think that and decided to go crazy for a second. Many people may think that we have no leaders, no queens, no God Almighty, control. Oh boy, I'm here to remind you guys all that God is great and He is definitely in control. And you guys can start getting your act together because this game is changed. Today I wanted to remind you some words of heroes, some words who decided to stand up to these incredible challenges that we face in humanity. Let's start with one incredible president, President Reagan.
My fellow Americans, today has been a day that should make us proud. It marked the end of the successful evacuation of PLO from Beirut, Lebanon. This peaceful step could never have been taken without the good offices of the United States and especially the truly heroic work of a great American diplomat, Ambassador Philip Habib. Thanks to his efforts, I'm happy to announce that the U.S. Marine contingent helping to supervise the evacuation has accomplished its mission. Our young men should be out of Lebanon within 2 weeks. They, too, have served the cause of peace with distinction, and we can all be very proud of them. But the situation in Lebanon is only part of the overall problem of conflict in the Middle East. So, over the past 2 weeks, while events in Beirut dominated the front page, America was engaged in a quiet, behind-the-scenes effort to lay the groundwork for a broader peace in the region. For once, there were no premature leaks as U.S. diplomatic missions traveled to Mideast capitals, and I met here at home with a wide range of experts to map out an American peace initiative for the long-suffering peoples of the Middle East, Arab and Israeli alike. It seemed to me that with the agreement in Lebanon, we had an opportunity for a more far-reaching peace effort in the region, and I was determined to seize that moment. In the words of the scripture, the time had come to follow after the things which make for peace. Tonight, I want to report to you on the steps we've taken and the prospects they can open up for a just and lasting peace in the Middle East. America has long been committed to bringing peace to this troubled region. For more than a generation, successive United States administrations have endeavored to develop a fair and workable process that could lead to a true and lasting Arab-Israeli peace. Our involvement in the search for Mideast peace is not a matter of preference. It's a moral imperative. The strategic importance of the region to the United States is well known, but our policy is motivated by more than strategic interests. We also have an irreversible commitment to the survival and territorial integrity of friendly states. Nor can we ignore the fact that the well-being of much of the world's economy is tied to stability in the strife-torn Middle East. Finally, our traditional humanitarian concerns dictated a continuing effort to peacefully resolve conflicts. When our administration assumed office in January of 1981, I decided that the general framework for our Middle East policy should follow the broad guidelines laid down by my predecessors. There were two basic issues we had to address. First, there was the strategic threat to the region posed by the Soviet Union and its surrogates, best demonstrated by the brutal war in Afghanistan. And second, the peace process between Israel and its Arab neighbors. With regard to the Soviet threat, we have strengthened our efforts to develop with our friends and allies a joint policy to deter the Soviets and their surrogates from further expansion in the region, and if necessary, to defend against it. With respect to the Arab-Israeli conflict, we've embraced the Camp David framework as the only way to proceed. We have also recognized, however, solving the Arab-Israeli conflict in and of itself cannot assure peace throughout a region as vast and troubled as the Middle East. Our first objective under the Camp David process was to ensure the successful fulfillment of the Egyptian-Israeli peace treaty. This was achieved with the peaceful return of the Sinai to Egypt in April 1982. To accomplish this, we worked hard with our Egyptian and Israeli friends, and eventually with other friendly countries to create the multinational force which now operates in the Sinai. Throughout this period of difficult and time-consuming negotiations, we never lost sight of the next step of Camp David: autonomy talks to pave the way for permitting the Palestinian people to exercise their legitimate rights. However, owing to the tragic assassination of President Sadat and other crises in the area, it was not until January 1982 that we were able to make a major effort to renew these talks. Secretary of State Haig and Ambassador Fairbanks made three visits to Israel and Egypt early this year to pursue the autonomy talks. Considerable progress was made in developing the basic outline of an American approach which was to be presented to Egypt and Israel after April. The successful completion of Israel's withdrawal from Sinai and the courage shown on this occasion by Prime Minister Begin and President Mubarak in living up to their agreements convinced me the time had come for a new American policy to try to bridge the remaining differences between Egypt and Israel on the autonomy process. So, in May, I called for specific measures and a timetable for consultations with the governments of Egypt and Israel on the next steps in the peace process. However, before this effort could be launched, the conflict in Lebanon preempted our efforts. The autonomy talks were basically put on hold while we sought to untangle the parties in Lebanon and still the guns of war. The Lebanon war, tragic as it was, has left us with a new opportunity for Middle East peace. We must seize it now and bring peace to this troubled area so vital to world stability while there is still time.
It's Orly Benny Davis with The Impossible Truth. I started with a part of Ronald Reagan about the incredible challenges that the Middle East is giving the world in all those years. And it's always one issue that is completely non-changeable, and it's a fact of the Palestinian issue. And the fact that Israel is promoting peace is known because that's how they signed peace accord with Egypt, and it's implemented with Jordan, and it's implemented, and even they make up with Turkey now, and they all working. And the fact that the Palestinian is not working means that we have a problem with that party. So let's start taking Palestinian off the equation, okay? Now we are left with a chaos. The chaos was created by the ISIS movement. The ISIS movement is a group that probably by all means are drugged. And when I say drugged, I'm saying people that were given medication, some kind of drug to make them behave in cold blood as cold blooded killers. I've been looking and searching some information, and for some reason, people don't think that something like that occurs when there are facts on the ground that they're drugged. So there are people that are managing other people with drugs and making them do stuff to alter the history and the balance of power in the region. Because of that, we have the superpower decided to fight them, and they're fighting them bad, Russian, American, and all the European Union troops. I think that whatever happened last week in Independence Day, on Independence Day, and the most incredible sight in France, Nice, is a stage that they broke the rules of engagement. It means that France, as we know it, is not anymore for now. And Mr. Hollande did well to call upon recruiting people to the armed forces. on a volunteer base to help and to recruit them, something that we all have to consider. Now, what happened in Baton Rouge is horrifying, like what happened in Dallas. But let's not confuse ourselves with what is actually taking ground. I have an opinion, and it's only my opinion. I am at liberty to think that it's what it's happening. I don't know if the facts are completely on the ground for this, but we need to make sure that you all know what we are dealing with. For more than 20 years, I've been listening to one man that calls Farrakhan. Farrakhan is the founder of the Nation of Islam in America, based in Chicago. I've been witnessing him calling upon Jews as the bloodsucker of the universe. I saw him calling upon 1 million march to Washington, D.C. And 1996 was so long ago that we forget. Farrakhan was a movement. Behind the scene, he completely organized himself, and he calls upon the injustice that people are doing to him as a black fellow. He even consider the privileged president not to be a part of the black, like his skin doesn't matter anymore because his privileged life was different. And he could include MC Eminem, the guy, that rapper, that he come from the ghetto, he's a part of it. So the injustice of the poverty is the one that is raising for Black America to be. And at the end of the day, they all need to be Islamic. So you guys are playing with fire if you pretend that this guy is not real. Because by ideology, he's been asking to turn America to Black America. We owe him something, he thinks. We didn't teach them how to do the hard craft of whatever we wanted to learn. And you guys today know that everybody can learn anything online, so there is no boundaries anymore, but it's still keeping on this. And if you see Israelis, you know, he's true to his thinking. I'm not saying that it's not. He even mentioned the Torah, which he thinks that the Torah is something Christian use, which make us understand that he doesn't know about it. But it's okay, you know, ignorance is a blessing sometimes, but it's really not the problem. The problem is if you seek justice by killing somebody else. Now, I've been waiting on this to see how long it's going to take that is going to come out. And in the recent news of 17 hours ago, they say that the Baton Rouge shooter, Kevin Eugene, long was Nation of Islam member, he rallied against crackers on YouTube. The YouTube account operated by Gavin Eugene Long and discovered by the Daily Caller revealed keen sight into what might motivate him. Now, you guys have to check it out and think that maybe you have the start of a revolution in your midst and you're pretending that it's poverty, Black Life Matter, which is what they're using to call this revolution. It's not the cause. Remember, every life is matter. You know, for somebody to even say that one is matter and the other is not, it's not right. So we are using EMBL and I put on my site one thing that says, you know, they're calling for justice, and when they say that justice is not, they have a problem with so many people. They've been blaming Hillary for so many things, and I was wondering what was it. And she was, he was blamed for the killing of Gaddafi, because Gaddafi was killed by his own people, and blaming Clinton, Hillary Clinton, for that is really outrageous. But because she allowed it to happen, he says. So he has a case against Hillary. Because he was a friend of Gaddafi, his brother Gaddafi. I remember his brother gave him $1 million, which is Brotherhood of Man, to sponsor his hatreds toward other people. So we all know what he was doing, and we know the march that he'd been doing, and to go to you know, to Alabama, back to Alabama, to disturb the Jewish community too, and calling them in their name. It was like traumatizing, and we stay still and we stay steady and we don't say a word. But if he got, this guy's is you know, he's free to do whatever he wants, don't expect it to be any better. You know, it's time to call it quits. It's time to him to become whoever he is, a good Christian guy, or whatever he decide to be, if he's Muslim or not, it's his business. Anyway, so we have this situation in Baton Rouge that everybody is completely terrified, because if you're attacking the law and order in the world, what is left, okay? Next is going to be the shrines. And somebody for some reason forgot to call that they are calling... the rise is again the Crusaders. They have some problem now with the Crusader. Think how our life is so backwards. All right, guys, I think it's time for music. Let's listen to one of those beautiful, beautiful songs I gave you, I prepared for you.
Well, I just heard the news today. It seems my life is gonna change. I close my eyes, begin to pray. Then tears of joy.
All right, guys, we are busy today, so I have to interrupt this beautiful music to keep on and giving some confrontation to whatever we witness all together, but we have to stand strong. Let's give a moment to listen to what happened in Nice, France.
First of all, it's not a surprise, because we were expecting something like that since months, you know. It's clear that after we have destroyed, you know, the networks, the terrorist network between Belgium and France, it was obvious that there was still a big risk with lone terrorists attacking or fighting with a rifle or with a car against population, against the crowd, you know, and that, well, we were really focused on it for the football, for the Euro football competition. We were thinking about it for the Tour de France, but it's true that... yesterday, for the 14th of July, it seems that we have not been enough careful
indeed,
about this possibility.
Indeed, from the pictures, for the moment, what we can see, it doesn't appear as if there was as big of a perimeter set up as we have seen this past month here in the French capital and elsewhere for these fan zones for the football tournament. I would like to ask you what we heard from, in terms of the French president just following the attack. He said, of course, right away that this was a terrorist attack. We are waiting to fully understand the exact nature, once again, whether or not it's a lone attack or whether whether or not this driver acted with other accomplices. However, the president said that the state of emergency, which just hours before he said would be repealed, he said, indeed, we are going to stick with it and continue it. Do you think that it's making a difference?
Well, the reality is that we know very well that to fight against terrorism requires, you know, on a long time. It's not something you can stop in one day or in one week, you know. That needs a long time in which everybody has to be very careful, in which, you know, it is necessary to maintain a kind of state of urgency in order to push everybody first to protect themselves and to use the police and the army to protect everybody. So, we are in a situation which the president and the prime minister now have said and explained that it's a long fight in which we have to use all the means, but all the tools, but staying into the French democracy, that is to say respecting the laws of our republic. And that the difference with others, you know, we are not in the United States, in France, Guantanamo, it's impossible by chance. And therefore, you know, we have to find the right way to fight against terrorism with our system, with our laws, with our possibilities. And I think that we are at the top of what it is possible to do, because it's very difficult to block, you know, a lone fighter, a lone terrorist attacking, you know, the crowd and ready to be killed in the operation. And it's a more difficult act, you know, you can block.
Yeah. Indeed, that's what's so disturbing about what we saw take place in Nice, is it was just a simple, a very large truck. It was a very simple attack in one way, if we can say it like that. And how, though, can we help security now? One problem is that security is always prepared for the last attack. And as you just mentioned, just this week, we had essentially the new Parliament Committee report saying that indeed it looks like these attacks will change in nature.
Well, no, it's not a change of nature. You know, that's an evolution. We have destroyed the network, the terrorist network who was working on France and Belgium, in France and Belgium. Therefore, now we know that the main possibility for the terrorists are to attack alone, you know, because it's more and more, it is very difficult to block them. When you are alone and you make an attack, it's very difficult. But we don't have to forget that all these operations are not the fact of the mad guy, you know. They are the fact of an organization. And I'm sure that in the next hours, we will hear something from Daesh, you know, from Syria, saying, well, our brother have destroyed a lot of crusaders, you know, in France, and we are happy about it. Sure. You know, it's the terrorist organization is in France, is fighting against us for a lot of reasons, as you know, and therefore, you know, the problem is for us to reduce the possibilities, knowing that it's impossible to stop everything, and that's the point, that's the key point, the key issue. It's impossible to block everything, but up to now we have succeeded, because if you look at as you say, the European tournament, football tournament. If you look at the Tour de France, if you look at all the big events in France in the past 4, 6, 5 months, we have blocked the possibility to do something. So the pity is that yesterday, but in Nice, they have succeeded.
Indeed. All right. Well, Alain Drie, thank you very much for joining us here on the program.
All right, then back. That was some from France 24 information about what happened up to Nice and the fact that the French are recruiting thousands of new recruiters to their army. That makes that a lot of sense. Excuse me. And together with what's going to happen next, they're going to have to train them. And training is not something that happens over day, if you may. It's happening with a lot of knowledge. That's why we created some kind of a team, an A team, to help in Israel, from Israel, to help every country in the world that needs to be protected or empowered or acknowledged in some form, technological, personal combat, security advising, everything that you would think you might need for your country to be safer, we are here in Israel to help you. We are creating at this point today. I've been on the floor of the Knesset, walking to talk to some member of the Knesset and organize this group, and even giving a place and space for practicing to empower people. You remember, they think that you all are not prepared. Let's surprise them. The difference between surviving an attack and living through it is to know what to do. The fact that when there is a shoot up, everybody's going under the table, it won't do. You need to know what to do. If you're young, if you're old, if you're, you know, a girl, if you're a boy, it doesn't matter. Now, this is as far as the personal, you are responsible for your personal well-being. Please, please don't think that the police can be tear apart in 1,000 pieces. It cannot protect. It can protect a general area. Now, think about it. If you guys will take the time, in 24 hours, we promise that you'll be more educated, you'll be more agile, you will know what you need to be in shape, and you also will get some attitude that you all need to survive this this part. Because the goody two-shoes attitude, like we all politically correct, let's not hurt them while they're killing and slaughtering children and people all over the world, it's over, you guys. When we say it's over, it means it is over. Wake up your sissy tissues and let's get into action. So we are here in Israel. We're preparing for you any kind of support that you need. You can call us on the phone. You can come to visit us. You can ask us to send a team over to your campuses, communities, and we will arrange this. This is not advertising. This is a call to help humanity in a time of need, and we are here for you as a nation that has to bring light upon others. This is our role in the world. This is our duty. That's where you're going to find out why God wants us to live and to exist, so we can help you. If you want to have also, you know, medical information of the after, this is like the horrific thing. Just remember what happened in Orlando. We had Jewish doctors, let's not forget there, that they know probably from the drill of Israeli. They were ready. They called upon in Orlando, Florida. Everybody showed up to the emergency room, and the doctor acted impeccably. They were heroes of the time. And we need every medical forces to be the heroes in case, God forbid, something happened. And I'm telling you, if this is a time of emergency, time of war, a crazy war, let's win this. And I want to call to duty the Hollywoods people, the Hollywoods that put among the children, the corrupted mind children, a corrupted scenery that teach them how to kill in a virtual universe where all the movies are harmful, all the movies are killers, all the movies are horribles. I'm calling you upon God Almighty to change your way and make yourself a symbol of unity and brother of men. Let's take this tool that you have, like the Facebook have the responsibility to take all terrorist action into and out of the web. You guys have to take all the violence out of your movies. It's your duty. It's your responsibility. And God Almighty is our witness here. So let's listen to much more Jewel that we had to face this week. Let's go to Turk. Turkey and what happened there.
That the Turkish military has now issued a statement, at least elements in the Turkish military has issued a statement saying that they have overthrown the government of President Erdogan. They say that they want friendly relations with the world and that they are doing this, in their words, in this statement, to restore democracy and human rights. We know that the prime minister of Turkey, before this statement, said that an attempted coup was underway, then drew back from using the term coup, called it a mutiny, said it is only parts or groups within the Turkish military that is attempting this, as opposed to the entire military as well. Here you have portion of that statement. This attempt will not be permitted. Those who attempted this will pay the heaviest price. An enormous show of military force in Istanbul, Turkey's largest city, but also in Ankara, the capital of Turkey. You're seeing tanks at the Istanbul airport where that terrorist attack was just a couple of weeks ago. The main bridge you're seeing there crossing the Bosphorus, traffic has been blocked there. You're also seeing low-flying jets and helicopters over the major city. When I say low-flying, I mean within feet of the ground, a remarkable show of force. As this is happening, you have that the president of Turkey, Mr. Erdogan, has been on vacation, though in Turkey, on the coast. We are told he's going to make a statement to the nation shortly.
All right, let's go back. I think that we had some problem. Guys, today is not perfect. All right, let's give it to it. But it's not perfect because we are overwhelmed by all this that's going around us. And if we pretend like it's, you know, kumbaya, we will get there. But slowly, but surely. Now, Turkey had a coup, attempted coup, and Erdogan took control. He threw up all the government official that he declared rebels, traitors. Then all the generals he put in jail, and all, of course, the Justice Department was thrown out of office too. It means that he is de facto a dictator. The Euro is a democratic elected official. Now, you guys, if you stay back and let this dictator run his course, it means that you're going to be waiting for more trouble to come. So I would call everybody from all over to call upon him to install first the judges, or if he wants to make immediately some kind of election for that, if they need to choose, he cannot appoint them all, that's for sure. Then he need to have a free and open court for the other arrest. And the third one that I want to ask, he's been blaming a general for years already that he's calling upon his coup. Well, buddy, you were prepared, because the list that you launched, you know, 8 hours into a coup, and this TV guy that was ready calling upon all, it means that something was staged. Once something is staged, the Turkish population really didn't buy it. It means that you just wanted to become a dictator by all means, and you just play somebody up for the role. So good luck, buddy. But we didn't buy it, okay? Now, dictatorship is not going to be in Turkey. It's not the way that the country is set. It's democracy. And maybe, you know, give it some transparency for any kind of judgment to how the heck they can manage to bring, you know, like armed vehicles into the square, and how they could fly over military planes. That's behind me. Anyway, more to tell you about. There was, you know, emergency landing in Brussels, where Boris Johnson, the new elected foreign minister of England, was attending a meeting of foreign secretaries of the European Union. He had some trouble with his plane, and thank God that all is well and he's just late. But let's say the kingdom is not going to abandon her friends in the EU, so they don't have to worry about that. Cooperation is everlasting. I'm sure that they're going to get the grip. It's only strategic, you know, redistribution of the power. Let's take it from there. All right, guys, we're running fast to, you know, few songs left. Maybe if we can, I have a few segments more. So let's hear some music and we'll go back after that. Right, and we are back. We're calling all angels of God and all angels amongst human to come and join forces to, you know, to drive away this crazy world that turns against us. And I want to tell you something. I've been speaking to my youngster, and I've been realizing that we all speak too slow for them. I'm speaking slow because I'm on the radio now, but in general, they think that we speak too slow. We are boring them to death. And it comes to mind that probably they are running the world faster in their mind because the quantity of information they process is so big that they need to cue. I don't know that if I only have to deal with geniuses and that's what's the problem is, but by all means, guys, you know, I'm sorry. I'm going to take it slow because they are driving us crazy. Now, let's look who we have to say goodbye to. We have to say goodbye to Mr. Cameron that served so graciously the kingdom and the Parliament of England, and he was incredible in his last speech. So let's listen to him.
Can I thank my right honourable friend for his very kind remarks? I remember one of the toughest conversations I had in politics was actually when I was leader of the opposition, and I was trying to get him to join my front bench, and he was on a bird watching holiday in Patagonia, and it was almost impossible to persuade him to come back. Not many people know this, but actually his first act as Chancellor of the Exchequer was to fire me as a special advisor. And I'm very proud of the fact that one of my first acts was to appoint him to my cabinet in the coalition government. And I know the then Deputy Prime Minister will join me in saying that he provided great wisdom, great thoughtfulness, great ballast at a time of national difficulty in the advice that he gave us. He's not always the easiest person to get hold of. We've tried Tory modernisation has never quite got as far as getting Ken Clark to carry a mobile phone. He did briefly have one, but he said, the problem is people keep ringing me on it. Which was, and we had to move, I seem to remember, in opposition, we had to move our morning meeting to accommodate his 9 o'clock cigar. But I will watch these exchanges from the backbenches. I will miss the roar of the crowd. I will miss the barbs from the opposition. But I will be willing you on. And when I say willing you on, I don't just mean willing on the new Prime Minister at this dispatch box, or indeed just willing on the front bench defending the manifesto that I helped to put together. But I mean willing all of you on, because people come here with huge passion for the issues they care about. They come here with great love for the constituencies that they represent. And also willing on this place. Because, yes, we can be pretty tough and test and challenge our leaders, perhaps more than some other countries, but that is something we should be proud of and we should keep at it. And I hope you will all keep at it, and I will will you on as you do. The last thing I'd say is that you can achieve a lot of things in politics. You can get a lot of things done. And that, in the end, the public service, the national interest, that is what it's all about. Nothing is really impossible if you put your mind to it. After all, as I once said, I was the future once.
A
and a standing ovation from the Conservative benches as David Cameron closes his last Prime Minister's questions.
Incredible. He is incredible. Like, you know, this the sentence of the century. How was the future before, you know? I was the future. What's, that's incredible. Well, I'm the future, okay? Let's stop thinking about, you know, other people. Every time I see somebody in office, I said, oh, poor boy. And they ask me why. I said, because soon they'll have to leave. So whoever is in office, poor you guys, because soon you're going to have to leave because somebody else is going to come. You know, and they're all really wildcat these days. I saw the people in the Knesset today. They're all young, but, you know, knowledge, understanding is expertise is something that you need to learn and earn. You cannot buy it, and nobody can buy it for you, too. So that's a really task that you have to uphold. But somebody who does have the experience and does have the character and does have the posturing to be an incredible VP candidate, and I'm saying candidate because, you know, by all means, I didn't give up on somebody else yet in the game. Let's listen to Donald Trump, new candidate, Mr. Pence.
Tell us what you're hearing.
Well, we're hearing that even after Donald Trump made his formal offer to Mike Pence, and even after Mike Pence had flown from Indiana to New York, Brooke, Trump was still having some second thoughts, to the point where we are told that around midnight Eastern, remember he was on the West Coast, but around midnight Eastern, Donald Trump was calling some senior advisors saying, is this a done deal? Is it too late to change my mind, to back out? And the answer was no. Now, we're not told that he said he wanted to change his mind, but he was definitely sort of not entirely comfortable with that decision, according to people who we talked to. I will tell you that the campaign is pushing back hard on this, as you can imagine. A spokesman says that there is zero truth to this. But we feel confident that this is something that did happen. And if you watch what happened last night, Brooke, in public, Trump was calling in to Fox News, talking to Greta Van Susteren, saying that he had not yet made his decision, saying nice things about Chris Christie, saying nice things about Newt Gingrich. And that was after, according to our reporting and several sources on this, he'd already made the offer to Pence. I think this all speaks to the following, that Donald Trump is somebody who has become Donald Trump because he's gone with his gut, and his gut has led him to the most successful life, both in business and now in politics. And this is a decision that he did not make with his gut. He made it based on what was politically practical, what people around him were telling him to do. And he's not used to following his gut. We'll see down the road if this really watershed moment in his campaign and in his life will bear out his gut being right or listening to what's practical.
Well, all right. I think the Donald Trump decision to call up Mr. Pence to be his VP is the most brilliant idea, because I listened to the man. I know politics is a winner, and he's incredible. And I love this man. I trust him. He's a Marine. And if there is anything America needs, is a good Marine on the job now. But, you know, for all my friends out there, of you too. Anyway, let's remind everybody that if you guys are in a position of power that needs to have sustained information, advice, or anything about security, about how to fight terrorists, we are not teaching the art of war. We're teaching how to survive a war. We're teaching you how to overcome the challenges, and now you posture against a lot and come through. We have some miracles in our pockets to show in Israel, and we have a great team to play with you. You can call on me to orlyusa@aol.com, orlyusa@aol.com, and I'll arrange for you to have the team of your dream coming to help you. All, of course, with accordance with the American or any other country's rules and regulation, and with the blessing, it will be only with the blessing of the State of Israel. Okay, so we want to salute you. But I'm taking my breath here, because before I salute you, I have to recognize that this week we commemorate the life and the achievement of a great lady, a great woman that, like her, there is only one in the world. It's my mom, Lisa Twilley, which she was one of the heroes in my life. She took me to a political rally when I was 5 years old. Barely could walk and stand in the crowd. She tracked me and tagged me along and, you know, preached to me how incredible freedom is for women and how all women need to be free and how powerful she can be and how she can work her day in, day out and help her parents. She was the first in 12 children to a rabbi and a rabbi, and she brought them together. She came to the State of Israel from the State of Israel of Libya, Tripoli, where they were survivor of the Nazis. They ran away and they arrived through Italy to Israel. And she was 15, working in 15, 16, working, you know, in the field, like all Israeli girls up there that created the land, that built up the nation. And she was a woman of beauty, of luck, of grace, of incredible wit, and incredible humor. So for you, mommy, I bless your soul, and I pray for your rest in peace with the angels, and I hope that I can be worthy to call myself your daughter. God bless you. Bye-bye, everybody. I love you. Ciao, ciao.